The moment so many of you have been waiting for has arrived. Let me welcome to the stage Hilary Bratt, Simon Calder, and Matthew Paris.
The moment they've all been waiting for.
Ooh.
Hilary's microphone isn't working. I don't know if mine is, but I've possibly got a louder voice than her. Hello, everybody, and welcome. And we're actually doing air traffic control at Heathrow right now. So if we get... Oh, here we are. It's marvellous.
Can you hear me at the back? Yes, I think you can. You have to hold it right up to your...
I'll talk through this. Yeah. Anyway... lovely to see such a big crowd. I know you're here for these two splendid gentlemen, but I get here first because I'm the quote chair. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the book because, as you know, you don't come to a Stamford's Writing Festival without knowing about a book and hopefully buying a book. The book in question is Too Oldly Go. I'm Hilary Bratt from Bratt Travel Guides, and I'm extremely old. And so, some time ago, we were talking about what we'd like to publish. Is that better? Yeah. We were talking about what we'd like to publish, and I thought a collection of stories from older people would be absolutely brilliant. And so we put out a competition for through the Oldie, through U3A, and through our own website, for the best stories of travellers who travelled adventurously and were over 60. And we had some absolutely splendid stories. I had such a good time because I was actually travelling in Peru at the time, and they kept coming through through my emails, and I would read them and think, oh, that's good. Oh, that's good. Oh, I like that. Oh, that's really good. Before I introduce Simon and Matthew, I have to explain that Matthew has contributed to the book because although he's not as old as me, he's quite old. But Simon is very, very young and only qualified on Christmas Day to have written for the book. So he's written for another book called The Irresponsible Traveller because we do have something in common. I think we're all fairly irresponsible. And Matthew also contributed to The Irresponsible Traveller. And before I introduce them and hand over to them, I'm just going to read a few small extracts of some of the stories just to whet your appetite and make those of you who are adventurous think that, oh, you know, I've done that. And those of you who are thinking about being adventurous or perhaps are too young to be adventurous, because there are some sad faces here who I'm afraid are too young. But you do probably have parents who are very old, so that's okay. Is it working now?
Just pop it up now.
How's that? Doesn't sound very good. Can you hear me?
I don't know if you can hear me.
Ooh, that's very loud. Okay. Very good. I'm going to give you a quote from Dervla Murphy, who's one of the contributors, because it's such an ideal quote. And she says, wanderlust, unlike other lusts, does not diminish with age.
Huh. And I think she speaks for herself.
Well, we'll gloss that over. We'll gloss that over. So just a few... Actually, first of all, who in the audience... Let's have hands who actually contributed to the book. Because I know there we are, one... Two, excellent, three, super. So you've got quite a few contributors in the audience. I'm going to read one from a contributor because one of the things that came out was volunteering. And that's something that older people very often do very rewardingly, both for themselves and for the country or charity involved. And I won't tell you what sort of volunteering this is. You can read the book. The stench was unbearable. I stood with a chopper in one hand and a saw in the other. Should I sever the head or leg or withdraw the entrails? Decisions, decisions. That's one. Keep you guessing. Here's another one, quite different. This could apply not necessarily to an older traveller, but any traveller. But I think one thing that came out is as people get older, they become more imaginative in their travel. And here's someone in St. Petersburg. He says, I saw her immediately as I disembarked from the cruise ship, an attractive lady of around 30, watching the mostly over 60s arrive at St. Petersburg Quay, most of them looking for coaches to take them on the prescribed sights of the city. She stood quietly, with a self-confidence based on her attractiveness, as well as being in her home territory and knowing the ropes. I guess she was waiting for a single male to approach her. A single male of those lines of passengers snaking out of the cruise terminal was unlikely. The few males were under tight control of their partners. I usually travel alone and never take tours. I poke up narrow alleys to view stuff that's not on show, assess front garden plants to guess the yearly weather variability and the personality of the inhabitants, etc. Then he says, he goes up to the lady and he says, how much do you charge and for how long? With the barest suggestion of friendliness in her face, she quoted $50 for up to 2 hours. I want to see three things in the city, traveling by taxi, I told her, and I would like to ask questions as we go. I would like to travel through the poorest part of St. Petersburg and see the homes there. I would like to travel through the richest residential part of the city. Lastly, with your permission, I'd like to see where you live, the food you eat, the ingredients you choose and cooking utensils you use, and the books you read. So that was a very innovative use of a prostitute, and I think he got a far more different experience than if he'd spent his $50 in the more conventional way. So I'm now going to introduce Matthew Paris, who a lot of you will know from the Times, any Times reader knows Matthew, whose breadth of interest and experience is absolutely huge. I mean, Matthew, I know Matthew as a travel writer, because I first read words that he wrote 25 years ago with the publication of his book, Inca Cola, which I think is still the best book on backpacking in South America that's ever been written. But he still writes about travel, and he's a fantastic chap. And he contributed to Too Old to Go, so he'll tell us a little about his contribution. And other things. Simon is the face that pops up on television whenever there's a disaster. It sometimes pops up when there's something new. I know Simon from probably about 30 years ago when you wrote for the vacation workbooks. And Simon, like me, still hitchhikes. You do hitchhike, don't you?
Yeah. Everyone.
Doesn't everyone, exactly. So, you know, I think the three of us do things a little differently. We do things a bit differently for travel writers and a bit differently for oldies. And I'm going to start the ball rolling. I'll start with Matthew. Really just, as I say, just to start the ball rolling and to ask, what do you think the benefits and the disadvantages of traveling when you're over 60?
Right, the best things about being an oldly goer and the worst. The best is money. You can afford things that you couldn't when you were a teenager. You can occasionally stay in a very nice hotel just to recharge batteries. Money makes a huge amount of difference, and I don't mind roughing it. I love roughing it, but I like to know that if I just needed a nice restaurant one night or a rather better than rough wine one night, I could afford it. And the older traveller on the whole has money. Disadvantages, the worst things, your failing powers. I have forgotten to bring my glasses today, consequently will not be able to read anything from this book. I now struggle to bend down to tie up my bootlaces if I'm climbing. Indeed, the other day in my flat, I dropped some money and bent down rather suddenly to pick it up and farted involuntarily. And my lodger, Tom, said, And so it begins.
I'm going to heckle here at this stage because I'm not sure that money automatically comes with age. I would say that for an awful lot of people it doesn't. You have got absurd advantages, as I discovered with my Oyster card, which means that I never ever have to pay for any tube or bus in London ever, which
shocking.
Is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous. It's counterproductive because they ought to give us all free Boris bikes to keep us all fit. Mm-hmm. That would sort out your issue. And furthermore, you get the marvellous senior rail card. Again, it's ridiculous. But you also get, by the way, I think age 75, a free passport. Who wouldn't want that? However, you've also got problems such as insurance being much more expensive, and the trouble is, nobody knows how long we're going to go on for. Let's see how many euphemisms we can have for dying in here. So because you don't know when you're going to pop your clogs, you simply do not know how much to allow. Of course, you want to spend the kids' inheritance, or rather, transfer it to people in less affluent communities, which is effectively like volunteering, only like Matthew, you have a nicer time in your luxury hotel, but it's still a very good way of creating employment and spreading wealth. But you just don't know. And that's, I would have to say, a big problem. However, the main advantage is that, in one sense, lots of people, particularly if they're retired, or like me, they don't really have a proper job, have lots of time when they're older. But you've also got a very limited time, if you think about it, before you shuffle off this mortal coil. And as a result, you've absolutely got to do two things. First of all, work out what you really, really want to do. Secondly, raise your risk threshold. Be more irresponsible. It's ridiculous being irresponsible when you're 20. When you're 60, it's actually quite a smart idea, because frankly, nobody's going to miss you that much, and you might as well go out having a great time.
I think I shall answer my own question, because similar to Matthew, I find that the advantages are sort of counteracted by the disadvantages. The advantages is that the outside world poses far fewer threats to a single woman in her 70s as I am. I hitchhike safely now. When I was in my 20s, I probably couldn't have hitchhiked absolutely safely. I did, but now, you know, be a pretty desperate chap who tries to rape me. So, you know, there you are. So, you know, the outside world, I really do believe, is safer. But my inside world is certainly not safer. I forget things, I lose things. The worry of checking in at the airport, have you got everything, have you got your passport, that increases, unfortunately. When I was younger, I could travel so anxiety-free. And now, you know, it's endlessly checking, it's endlessly worrying. And that's a bore. And it may not be so with everyone, but I suspect it's so with quite a lot of people. And another really dodgy thing is, as you get older and you're a woman, it gets increasingly difficult to squat and have a pee. And so you tend to look for proper loos rather than going behind a bush.
Worth saying that Martin Randall Travel, very good company, does lots of cultural tours. I'm sure you've been on many of them. I went on a scoping trip with him once round Slovakia. And I thought, okay, so you're going to find the great museums, the great castles and everything. He said, no, the first thing you do whenever you go anywhere is find out where the loo is.
Yeah.
There we are. Oh, steady on. Sorry.
Right. Matthew, talk about the Oldly Go story that you told in the book, because I think this was something you reached a certain age and thought you better do it while you still could.
Yes, I have a flat by the River Thames, and I've been there for about 20 years. I look out over the river. I look across Limehouse Reach to Rotherhithe on the other side, and I see the tide coming in and the tide going out, and I, for years, have said to myself, how easy would it be to swim across? I've, in South America, swum across wider rivers than that, and there are no piranhas in the Thames, and so why don't I do it? And I've started to say, or had started to say to my friends, I'm going to swim across the river quite soon. I'm going to try it. I neared the age of 80 and had never quite got round to swimming across the river, and 80, 60, and decided it was about time. It would be good to try it when I'm 80. Very good.
Do you want a race?
Yeah. Yeah, I've climbed Kilimanjaro in every decade of my life since my teens, and I intend to do that in my 80s as well. But the times, no. The river, no. I thought, I'll do it another day. And then I thought I've really got to. My friends were beginning to think that I wouldn't do it. So I've got a young friend called Jonathan, and I said, well, Jonathan, what do you think? And he said, yeah, you should do it. He said, are you taking any flotation device? And I said, no, that would be cheating. He said, well, I could hire a kayak and just kind of paddle along behind you. And I said, no, that would be cheating. And there was a pause, and he said, in which case, I'm coming with you, which was very kind. And we looked at the tides tables and discovered, as we thought, that high tide, which is the best time to cross the Thames because you don't have to walk across a whole lot of mud and broken glass to get into the water, high tide would be at 3:34 in the morning. So I only had one glass of wine. We sat up. You don't want to do it during the day because there's boats roaring up and down. At night, there's almost nothing. And we took a minicab across to the other side of the river, and my friend Tom, of whom you've already heard, waited in the flat, and he was going to switch the lights on and off because he could see clear all both reaches of the river where we wouldn't be able to from where we were entering the water at Rotherhithe. So we waited at the right time. We took off all our clothes except for our underpants and vests and just left them. Probably people thought it was a suicide or something by the side of the river. And the lights didn't switch at 3:34. And I thought, oh, no, that the system isn't working. And I thought, well, come on, we'll just go in anyway. And we were just about to do it when an enormous barge whipped straight past us. And that's why he hadn't switched the lights on. He did. In we jumped. It was fine. The water's a bit salty in the Thames. The temperature was actually 21 degrees centigrade. That's pretty good. It was early September. It's much choppier when you're down there at wave level than it ever is looking down into the river. But we were fine. We struck out. And suddenly I looked across the other side, and the trees and the houses were sort of moving relative to each other in completely the wrong way. And I realized we were being swept upriver. And it then struck Jonathan that the tides would be in Greenwich Mean Time, and we were calculating in British summer time, and the tide was still coming in for another hour. So we did the sensible thing. We didn't try to swim against the flow of the river. We swam perpendicular to the bank, letting the tide take us wherever we would land on the other side. And after half an hour, and being swept a mile upriver to Wapping, and very tired, and having swallowed quite a lot of water, and with our underpants full of mud, you've no idea how much mud there is in that river, we landed. We had to run down a road called the Highway, about a mile down the highway, in our muddy underpants at about 4:15 in the morning. We surprised one or two people. We got back to my flat and rang the bell, and Tom said, ah, good, you're there. And I said, it's all right, Tom, tell the police, you know, we haven't drowned. And he said, I didn't ring the police. Why? I said, well, he said, I didn't think there was anything they could do. You'd either drowned or you hadn't. And I wrote about it for the newspaper, for the Times, and the Port of London Authority have now responded by enacting a bylaw making it illegal to swim in the River Thames.
Who Excellent. Wants to know what South American rivers you've swum across that are wider than the Thames? I do.
Well, a bit of the Amazon.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, the Amazon has so many islands, so it wasn't the whole Amazon. But yeah.
Very good. And the police are outside waiting for you now, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
Simon, have you got any stories you want to tell us?
Well, all I would say is probably going back to the idea of hitchhiking, I would commend it. How many people here have hitched in the last 10 years?
Good,
right,
is
okay.
It?
Well, there's a few.
How many people have hitched, may I ask, in the last 40 years? Ah. Mm. Well, why did you stop? Why did you stop, Matthew?
I think Because when I see an old man hitching by the side of the road, I assume that he has problems of some
Thank
kind.
You.
And if I'm in a mood to talk to someone about their problems, I might stop, but I might not be in that mood.
But it's okay. Probably Simon.
Well, yes. Yes. That's an interesting response. I've got my plan for my 60th year is that I want to hitchhike at least as much as I fly. So I'm pretty even about 3 hitches and 3 flights so far. And so far, I've spent less time waiting for lifts than I have waiting for delayed flights. So I think I'm kind of winning.
They probably feel sorry for you, Simon.
Thank you very much. How kind. Yes. Well, who cares, frankly?
What sort of people do you find pick you up? Younger or older drivers?
Well, anybody. Yeah, not just axe murderers, although that happens quite a lot in America.
Yeah.
It's all right. And I don't know. I've never, because I've always hitchhiked since I was 12, I just sort of never really stopped.
Yeah.
So I've never thought, oh, I'm now an older person hitchhiking. But now that you've raised the subject, I shall think every time people think I'm a mad person, especially Matthew. So I would urge all of the people who hitched 40 years ago but haven't hitched in the past 10 years just to try it. It's fine. There's worse ways to travel than a chauffeur-driven car by a self-selecting bunch of nice people. And furthermore, because, as you know, your risk profile can be as high as you like, it doesn't matter if it is the axe murderer too much.
I did actually hitchhike with an axe murderer once. I was hitchhiking in North Carolina, and a white van, picked me up, and I joined the other hitchhikers in the back of the van. One of them was extremely strange. The truck lurched. He fell off the chair. We laughed politely. And he then got on the chair and fell off it again so that we would laugh again. I asked him where he was going. He said he was going to South Carolina to kill the man who had slept with his wife. He then pulled out a gun and showed me the gun he was going to kill the guy with, told me the whole story. And I was pretty convinced that he was going to do that. But now this is the interesting thing. It would never have occurred to me to report him to the police. I just felt that we were all fellow hitchhikers together. And
well,
it was none of my business.
Something like the 12th Amendment, isn't it? The right to shoot the man who's been sleeping with your wife, I imagine.
Yeah. I don't know.
But look, you asked for stories. And of course, the great thing is that however old you are, new stuff keeps happening. I was just in the beautiful Greek island of Poros with my lovely family, and it's up there. You see, they've got a very handy handy map there. And I thought, well, I want to go off and explore for the day. And my family, who particularly the younger ones, really object to hitchhiking, made me go on my own, which was just as well, because I managed to get a lift in, you know, a JCB, in the bucket bit at the front. Now, that is travelling in style.
I'm going to chip in here with my own hitchhiking stories from To Oldly Go, because like Simon, I've hitchhiked every decade of my life except the first, and I'm now in my 70s, so I have to go on hitchhiking at least in my 80s. Goodness knows if anyone will pick me up. But, you know, when you're a woman, they assume that something's happened. Your car's broken down. So they screech to a stop. And then I think they're a bit shocked when you leap in the car and ask where they're going. But, you know, that's all right. But this is a story. I have a friend who's very useful because she has white hair. And she's had white hair for a long time. And so if I hitchhike with her, I push her to the front and the car's screeched to a stop. And we were hitching in Greece because there was very little public transport. And we were in the back of a pickup truck with a bunch of Albanian construction workers. And little bit from the book. The Albanian spoke about the same level of Greek as Janice. So although conversation didn't exactly flow, it sputtered along quite happily. They were, understandably, very curious about why two women, who certainly looked past the first flush of youth, were hitchhiking. They muttered amongst themselves, casting furtive glances at us, before asking Janice her age. 62, she told them. No interest there, then. So they pointed to me. How old is she? You could imagine a little glimmer of hope that I was a very wrinkly 38-year-old. Once the truth was out, they took no further interest in us. We relaxed until another pickup approached from the opposite direction. And to our alarm, a hand with a gun appeared through its window. You'll have to read the book to find out what
read
happened.
On.
Read
I
on.
I must say, I've possibly hitchhiked more than these two, but they seem to have quite a lot of armed incidents when they're hitching.
Yes.
Crikey.
Very good.
Can we talk about other forms of transport? Is that all right?
Yes.
So who's been on a cruise? Who's been on a saga cruise? Mm. Oh, a lady over there. What are they like? Ah, okay. The only thing I know about the saga cruise, and perhaps you can tell me if this is true or not, is that the crew and all the onboard staff are not allowed to overtake the guests. So if you're walking along, going up and downstairs, you've just got to hang back. Okay?
Good.
I shouldn't say this, in a travel exhibition where there are lots of cruises being advertised, but imagine cruises took place on dry land. Imagine that some enormous ark on wheels was kind of towed slowly around a continent with lots of people in very small rooms in it. And every now and again it would stop not even in a town but outside a town, and people would be allowed to make their way back into the town to see the town. Then they would come back and the towing process would go on. Why would one go on a journey like that?
Well, let me answer that, since I have been on a number of cruises, and it's simply because you can only unpack once, and you are going to lots of places which are quite difficult to reach otherwise. So, for example, island hopping around the Caribbean is really very difficult and expensive if you do it using public transport, as I imagine that you would and Hillary certainly would. If you do it on a cruise, it's extremely cheap, so long as you don't drink. Anybody here drink? maybe one of you. No. Okay, good. You're all doing dry February as well as dry January. Hooray. And so, therefore, if you don't drink, that the whole cruise business and the reason they put you back on the boat at 6 o'clock and ship you off to somewhere else is because you are going to be shopping, gambling, and more particularly drinking. You're a captive audience. They can mark up the drinks or whatever it is. So therefore, they think that you're going to make up the cost of the trip like that. And if you don't do that, then you just have a very nice island hopping time. I would urge you to do it, but possibly not on a saga cruise. Other cruises are available.
A friend of mine on the Times, a man called Michael Binion, who knows and loves St. Helena, says that a cruise arrived unexpectedly at St. Helena one Wednesday afternoon.
Just behind you.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, there. Arrived unexpectedly one Wednesday afternoon. St. Helena has early closing. Yes, I think looking around the room, some of you are old enough to remember early closing on a Wednesday afternoon. The tourist authorities in St. Helena tried to persuade the various tourist businesses and shops to open. Nobody would. They said, it's Wednesday afternoon, it's early closing, and 2,000 people got off the cruise, and all the doors remained shut. And they had to get back on again after a couple of hours.
That sounds like Devon.
Yes,
it's Devon like
that. By the way, just on the subject of St. Helena, if you've always wanted to go there, your chance begins in May, when the slightly dodgy airport is due to open. I say slightly dodgy, not because it's going to be a crash, but because it's not quite long enough, so it's going to be quite exciting. So there's boats that go there before then, but they're all going to stop once the airport opens, so good luck, everybody.
Mm. And there's a new Brat Guide to St. Helena.
Exactly,
a new
yes.
Edition.
New and excellent.
Relax. Because you're such a huge and lovely audience, I'm going to start the questions from the audience, because we've got all sorts of experts and storytellers and people.
Good.
So let's have the first question. I think that's probably a roaming mic.
Do you have to be over a certain age to ask a question?
Hello, this one's for you, Simon. You'll probably know the answer to this. Why is it so difficult when you're actually trying to book a flight to actually book an independent flight? So, for example, if you're going to Lanzarote and you're booking with sort of Thomas Cook, and then you want to return, they give you the option. You do not have the option other than if you have to book two single ways, and the flights are very limited, and there are no major carriers. So by the time you've actually paid for the low-cost carrier, it's not actually low-cost anymore.
Right, that's an interesting question. All I would say is that whenever I've gone to any bit of the Canaries, really, there've always seemed to be quite a lot of low-cost flights going in there, and that applies to Lanzarote and Fuerteventura, even La Palma, and everywhere else. So I'm not sure you...
No, once you've actually paid for your baggage as well, because you've got to pay...
Well, don't pay for your baggage. Who wants to pay for
baggage?
I don't. They're only going to lose it, for goodness sake. So, no, I would say just, well, there's plenty of low-cost airlines out there, and they're all very good, and they don't crash. Thank you.
Yeah, any other?
Matthew, my name is Ron Phippin, and you probably won't remember me, but I wrote you a letter many, many, many years ago about your llamas in Derbyshire, and the question is, do you still have them? The second question is, may I, with the chairman's permission, is a book review. May I mention the Holy Bible? This is the world's most bought book, but the least read. May I ask, and may I ask Matthew, like I believe, it is the Word of God inspired, and why isn't it read, and do you believe it is inspired by God?
Well, as this is really about travel, I think I won't answer a question on the Bible, but tell you that my llamas are in very good shape indeed. We've now bred 14 or 15 little llamas. Oh. They're gambling now on the hillside in Derbyshire. And any of you that have a little bit of land, about 1 acre per llama is what you need. So not easy in London, but outside, they're very, very easy animals to look after.
Who wouldn't want to say my llamas are in very good shape? How marvellous. And I'm just intrigued why you don't just put your London Riverside flat on Airbnb and then just go off on an endless trip. Why don't you do that?
That'd be quite a good idea. Yes, well, I do travel. I'm off to Zimbabwe, actually, next week, at the end of next week. I can thoroughly recommend Zimbabwe, and I can also recommend Hillary's book, or rather the Brat Travel Guide to Zimbabwe. It's not only the best travel guide to Zimbabwe, it's almost the only travel guide to Zimbabwe, and it's really good. Zimbabwe, people, is one of the friendliest, one of the safest countries in Southern Africa. If you don't get involved in opposition politics there, and I don't think you're going to, you will meet a kind, gentle, honest, friendly population, almost all of whom speak English. They have railways, the railways run, they have hotels, they have game reserves with people just waiting to welcome tourists. You can hire a car there, you can get a visa at the airport. It's a really, really beautiful country. I thoroughly recommend it.
Just don't call it Southern Rhodesia.
No.
Any other questions?
I've heard that llamas keep foxes away. Is that true?
Do llamas keep foxes away? The answer is yes. Llamas in South America have almost no natural predators except for wild Andean wolf-like fox things. And so every llama has an immediate warning system for anything that is like a dog. And any of you that have kept llamas or walked a dog past llamas will know that the llamas immediately run straight at the animal with their ears up like that, stop just short of it and stare at it. And they will do that with foxes too. Actually, a llama is harmless. They can't bite. They don't kick. But they just run at things. And dogs always run away. And so do foxes. They're also proof against badgers. We had a wood full of badgers when we bought our first llamas. The badgers have all quite voluntarily just upped and gone. It used to be Badger Central. Now there is just empty badger sets with the tumbleweed blowing past and cobwebs across the front of the sets.
I'm just going to phone up the controller of Radio 4 and say you need a new program called Llama Question Time.
And Simon, when you do cruises, I assume you're working, would you take one for a holiday yourself?
No, I'm always on holiday pretending to work. You should try it. It's much better than working. No, it's a very good way of, for example, and I'm going to be controversial here, Matthew is absolutely right about Zimbabwe. It's a wonderfully rich, culturally friendly, beautiful place. I must say that some of the more touristy Caribbean islands, actually, they've got a nice bunch of people there. They've got lots of shops. They've got one or two maybe historical artifacts, but actually you don't want to spend a huge amount of time there if there are much more enriching places. And for goodness sake, the clock is ticking and you have to get the best. So actually ticking off St. Vincent, Tobago, Barbados, one a day is not a bad thing to do, whether you're on holiday or you're pretending to work or both.
It's very easy to get a list of the top 50 things to do before you die, but those lists are often fairly obvious. What would each of you put on your list that was never on the top 50 list, that was off the beaten track, that was a favourite place that you'd recommend to this audience to go and see?
Well, I don't know, because I haven't been there yet. It wouldn't be on my list of, which I think we're supposed to call a bucket list, although I think it's a terrible name. There's loads and loads of places I haven't been to, such as Iran. Hooray! Now newly opened up and friendly, and so I'm looking forward to going there. Former Soviet Central Asia, where as long as you don't insult their national dish, you will probably have an arrest-free time. And marvellous parts of West Africa, where, of course, oh my goodness me, the World Health Organization likes nothing more than a global health emergency. Zika is a global health emergency. It's terrible for pregnant women in Latin America who are afflicted with this. For everyone else, it's if you caught it, it would be slightly inconvenient. And Ebola was a global health emergency. No, it wasn't. It was a terrible thing that happened to a small number of people, relatively speaking, in West Africa. And now everybody thinks that the entire continent from Cape Town to Tangier is off limits, and it's tosh. So how did we get there? Oh, yeah, West Africa. I want to go there. Thank you very much. Okay. Sorry.
I want to go into outer space. I really do. And it's even possible that before we all die, it may be possible to buy tickets into outer space. I particularly would like to go to Mars, and we are getting close to being able to go to Mars, but the big problem is that a rocket could take you to Mars, land you safely on Mars. We nearly have the technology for it now, but we do not have the means to take off again from Mars and come back. Now, this is where the older traveller comes in handy. I don't have to go back. I don't have to come back. It could just be the last thing I do. I could go to... I would, if you offered me now the opportunity to go to Mars. You said it'll take 7 years to get there. You won't be coming home. Well, I would be about 75 by the time I got there. What a thing to be the first human being to be born on planet Earth and to die in Mars. I would love to do that.
Okay, and any of you who've got a little bit of cash lying around, you might want to start up a Ryanair of outer space.
Yes.
And take,
yes.
Take Matthew out there. Crikey. But you've been to Kerguelen Island, which there, and that must feel outer space.
They put a huge hole where the island is, but if you make a line from the Cape of Good Hope across to Perth in Western Australia, stop halfway and go about 800 miles further south towards Antarctica, you find an enormous island, the length of Cyprus, that Captain Cook called Desolation Island when he first sighted it. It belongs to France. It's called Kerguelen. It's always been uninhabited. There's a small French scientific station on it. Anticyclones sweep across the island every week or two with wind speeds of up to 150 miles an hour. There are no trees. All the trees have blown off the island. There is no airborne infection possible on the island. When the ship comes in, which she does every 3 or 4 months, everybody gets flu. She goes away, everyone gets over their flu, and thereafter no one ever catches anything because everything just blows away in the wind. It is wildly, wildly beautiful, and you can actually go on a French government ship. So Kerguelen, if you're ready for a really desolate but in a strange way wildly beautiful place, another thing to do before we die.
There's always the Isle of Wight, if you...
and, I want to go to the island of Socotra.
Oh, yes.
Belongs to, yes, you see.
Yemen.
It yes. belongs to Yemen. Yes. And it has the most fabulous botany. Has anyone here been there? Oh, ooh. God, I'm jealous. Okay. So, you know, I think it's quite difficult and you probably have to camp. But
I think not just at the moment, actually.
Well,
Hillary,
it's
with
away
Yemen.
From Yemen.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Well,
I shall have to have a conversation with the person who's been there. I think we've time for one more. Let's try and make it an oldie question if we can. Here's an oldie. A young oldie.
Last and possibly least, you're obviously all a mine of travel information, which is very interesting and can be helpful. But I'd like to ask Simon one. If I were to email you with a personal travel query, would I expect a reply from somebody? And if it were to appear in the newspaper, would I be told by a reply email to watch out for it in the paper? Otherwise, I might just be looking and finding nothing. So, but thank you very much in advance, not only for answering that question, but to everybody for this afternoon's interesting get-together.
Thank you very much. Well, all I can say is that I do try to answer as many questions as I possibly can when there is a crisis, which very sadly seems to be about every 10 minutes these days. It gets more difficult because clearly I'm trying to help the maximum number of people. So apologies if you have emailed and I haven't responded. It's not because I'm not interested. It's simply that my entire staff is here, which is why I've got to leg it from here back over to the Independent. Other newspapers are available straight after this because it's our press day, and otherwise I'll get sacked from a sort of pretend job.
I reply to all letters written, enveloped, stamped and posted. I reckon that if someone goes to the trouble of writing a letter, posting it to me at the Times, it does reach me, then I think they deserve a reply, as long as the letter is not abusive. Thank you. I can't reply to emails. It's too easy to send an email, and there would be thousands, and I just can't.
Very good. I think that probably wraps it up. We are going to sign books. We're going to sign the one that the youngster here contributed to and the oldsters here contributed to, and you also contributed to that as being extremely responsible. And thank you for being such a big and wonderful audience.
Thanks.